President Joe Biden signed more than 30 executive actions during his first week in office, and several of those focus on immigration. They include revoking President Trump's controversial travel ban on some majority Muslim countries in the Middle East and Africa, also a call to suspend construction of a border wall and preserving the DACA program. He's also asking Congress to take up an immigration reform bill that creates an 8-year pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants and expands existing visa programs. We're taking a closer look at some of Biden's actions on immigration and the effect they could have. Join us now. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Are you happy to see President Biden reversing some of his predecessor's policies, like a travel ban or constructing the border wall? Are you concerned about border security or what happens next? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elise Cohen is an associate professor of political science at UW Green Bay, whose research focuses on refugees and human rights. Elise, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you, Keeley.
President Biden has outlined a lot of his immigration agenda even before taking office. Now that he is president and is signing executive actions and proposing legislation, what's your sense of how what he's done so far breaks down between, like, agenda setting and things that will really affect people?
Yeah, that's a great question to get started. I think one thing to keep in mind with this very assertive push towards immigration reform is making it clear that he's trying to follow through on a lot of the promises he made to the Democratic base, to those grassroots organizers that were really helping him win the election, that he will move forward, that he won't make the mistake, perhaps, that his predecessor, Obama, had made in waiting until the midterms, but going ahead and being upfront with proposing an immigration legislative agenda right away, and then doing what he can through executive actions to reverse some of the things that Trump had done, also largely through executive actions. So I think we can see a combination of some real changes, because the executive actions can indeed be undone pretty quickly, but then some that will be a little trickier and thornier where we talk about actual legislation.
This is a risk, a political risk that he runs, right, too, though, in presenting so much up front, because all of that opens him up to criticism from the right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we have seen some sources start to rein in expectations, especially on the legislative agenda, saying we recognize this is going to take time, or making comments like we don't expect the, quote, Biden bill to be forced all at once. Maybe this can be broken into chunks that can move through Congress in different ways. I think the backlash may come from the base, liberals and progressives, and again, those immigration advocacy groups that were so crucial to holding him accountable to his promises during the campaign, but they do want to see the kind of initial proposals he's making go through in a package, you know, pretty quickly. The big issue, of course, is that there are razor-thin margins for the Democratic majorities, and the Senate, for example, is split 50-50. So as long as we have a filibuster in place, it's unlikely that anything could move through without a true bipartisan cooperation.
Let's get into some of those more specific pieces of President Biden's plan when it comes to immigration. We're talking with Elise Cohen from UW Green Bay. She researches refugees and human rights. And you're part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know? What questions do you have about what's happening now? What do you think? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, just like Ed in Baraboo. Welcome to the conversation, Ed.
Hey, yeah. So I was just wondering, or I was just saying when I called in, I'm really happy that Joe Biden was able to push for the executive action with extending DACA. I know a lot of people in my inner circle and a lot of families are affected by those kinds of things. And these are really great working people. They come here to seek a better life, a better education. And also, it's really important to make sure that we're supporting everybody. And so I think this is a great thing that Joe Biden is doing.
Ed, thanks so much for the call. And Elise, he talks about DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Courts have upheld that program. What does this executive order from President Biden do?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And this is where we start to see some issues with how much can be long-term and permanent. So what the executive action does, it's actually a memorandum issued to the Attorney General and the DHS Secretary, just sort of instructing that DACA reflects the judgment of the administration that children brought to the U.S. who have obeyed laws, stayed in school, or enlisted in the military, and of course pass background checks, that they should be able to request temporary relief from removal. They should be able to apply for temporary work permits and not be a priority for removal, meaning deportation. But the memorandum is just kind of laying out that this is an instruction, right? That this is what we want to happen. The memorandum does not have the power to actually grant a permanent legal protected status to the Dreamers, to those that were brought here as youth. And so that's why we would really need to see legislation that makes its way through Congress in order for them to have more permanent protections or even a pathway to citizenship.
And that is something, then, that President Biden wants Congress to take up. He's proposing an immigration bill, and one of the big items here is that it includes a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. What does that pathway look like?
Yeah, that's a really important piece, and I agree that this is probably one of the most central core foundations of what the Biden administration wants to move forward as quickly as possible. So we're looking at a pathway to citizenship that would be a roughly 3 to 8 years, a 5-year path for permanent residents, then a 3-year naturalization wait to be naturalized as citizens. Now, this is limited to people with longstanding ties to the U.S. and that have been previously vetted. So this isn't, you know, every single undocumented immigrant or person in the United States. We also see this language in the fact sheet that the administration issued along with the bill proposal saying that we recognize America is a, quote, nation of immigrants. And so really trying to say this is reflecting who we are, what our values are, I think is a kind of incentive or encouragement to also Republicans that we should change alien to non-citizen. And so that goes hand in hand with the proposal of a pathway to citizenship. You know, think of these as people, not as aliens.
Yeah. If we don't have Congress, well, I mean, we don't have that legislation right now, and Congress may or may not move on that. So Jeff from Superior had a question about Biden's executive order on deportation, specifically about a Texas court ruling against that executive order on that 100-day moratorium on deportations for some undocumented immigrants. So where do we stand on this? Who gets to decide if this is something the administration can move forward?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question from the caller or the writer you mentioned. They are very on top of today's news. So just this morning, we had a federal judge block one of Biden's initial attempts to set out his immigration agenda. That was the 100-day moratorium on deportations. And unless it was somebody that's, you know, a national security or terrorist threat. And we saw the federal judge is responding to a lawsuit filed by Texas and said, well, we're going to put a pause on that moratorium at least for 14 days to really consider this lawsuit. It is unclear at this point how that will be implemented because it's not clear that ICE can be forced to deport people or forced not to deport people. But it's a very crucial window into the legal challenges that are likely to unfold, where we will probably see a lot of other lawsuits brought by Republican-led states trying to challenge some of the executive actions that Biden is able to use his power for.
We are talking with Elise Cohen right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay. We're discussing the executive actions on immigration that President Biden has taken during his first week and what he's calling on Congress to do. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about President Biden's reversal of some of the Trump policies, like a travel ban from some countries in Africa and the Middle East, or constructing a border wall? What do you want to see happen with the DACA program? I mean, is there time for Congress to vote on an immigration reform bill? Should it be at the top of the list? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. This conversation continues ahead on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Right now, we're talking with Elise Cohen, a professor of political science at UW-Green Bay, and we're looking at President Biden's actions on immigration during his first week in office and the immigration bill that he's proposing and wants Congress to pass. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234, and we've got Tyrone in Milwaukee on the line. Hey, Tyrone.
Good afternoon, ladies. Thanks for taking my call. And a wonderful snowy afternoon for everybody here in Milwaukee. Yes, it is, but it's January. Very quickly, a couple different things there. You know, I don't know what all's in the bill, but I'm glad to see it go forward, you know, especially if it means, you know, we can't have people locked up in cages. You know, that's got to come to a complete stop right there. You know, I mean, people leaving their countries, you know, looking for asylum, you know, we have to reach out to the people. They're fleeing for their lives, you know, because they think they're going to be killed, as I was hearing different programs throughout the week and the day. So we need to stabilize the region. We need to bring life back to the region so they can feel safe where they are. We don't want to create a vacuum to where we just have, you know, just vast dry lands, you know. So we need to make their home places, you know, livable again to where they don't feel, that they got a fear for, you know, life or death, and to where they've got to run to stay alive, you know. So we got to stabilize the region. But most certainly we need a human side to where, you know, we can bring them to safety, but stabilize the region so they won't have to fear and run for their lives as well then.
Tyrone, thanks so much for giving us your take on what the United States' role on immigration is in the world. That makes me think of one of the most controversial parts of President Trump's early term, that so-called Muslim ban, restricted travel from 8 Muslim-majority countries, and then last year added more nations to the list. President Biden is revoking that. Elise, can you remind us of the impact that's had, particularly for refugees?
Yes, I think the refugee and asylum pieces of this puzzle that the caller mentions with humanitarian protection are really crucial. One of the things where we can see Biden use that executive action very quickly and efficiently is, as you mentioned, just reversing the travel bans that Trump had put into place. So the one that got called the Muslim ban after it went through a few iterations, you know, focused on Libya, Syria, Iran, Yemen, Somalia. It also included North Korea and Venezuela with certain groups. But really what we see with the major concentration of people in need of help that are displaced, they are coming from places like Yemen and Syria, and there are millions of refugees that have been unable to access protection because of the U.S. retreat from refugee resettlement under the Trump administration. Trump was able to lower the ceiling down each year of his administration to historic lows that we haven't seen since the refugee program went into place since 1980. So we were looking at, you know, something like 20,000 refugees is a cap, whereas historically it was, you know, maybe 80 to 100,000 admissions per year. That's a place that Biden has also said he hopes to quickly make changes after this next fiscal year. He pledged to raise that back up, the admissions cap of refugees, people fleeing persecution, torture, harm, to raise it back up to 125,000 for the next year. For asylum, that is more complicated. Trump and his administration and the attorney general did so many procedural changes to narrow the eligibility, and that's for people that are arriving at our border or trying to claim asylum along our ports of entry, that will take some time. That will not be as quick as just reversing a travel ban or raising a refugee cap. I think one thing that the listeners could really look for is what will happen with the MPP, the Migration Protection Protocols, which gets called Remain in Mexico, because Biden announced that they would stop enrolling people in it right away. But we still have thousands of asylum seekers sort of stranded in Mexico along the southern border.
Let's bring Ricardo and Madison into the conversation. Hi, Ricardo.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm just bringing up the concept of the DACA program. I am a DACA recipient myself. But I like the immigration reform because that covers people who were not able to apply for it. You know, for instance, my brother, just because of the age gap, it's really very, very bad that he couldn't apply for it. And still, he should have been able to apply for it. And I feel like the immigration reform will benefit it will benefit more people. And I feel like the country, because you are paying the Homeland Security, which is right now in charge of the threat of the COVID-19 and not the threat of terrorists. And I feel like those, and I think that kind of will lead to like a follow-up question. Would those payments will benefit the Homeland Security, which is in charge of, you know, threats that hurts the country, which is the Homeland Security. How would those payments, you know, the DACA program costs $495 to renew. And I wonder if that money could also stimulate some of the crisis that we're going through.
Ricardo, thanks for that question and for sharing your story. And Elise, what else can you tell us about DACA and what Ricardo's brought up?
Yeah, that's a really crucial piece of the story, too, because DACA recipients have been subject even to threats of deportation prior to this administration coming in and issuing this memorandum that they are going to change things, that they do believe in the principles of DACA. So I think that it will be a relief for some of them to know that they will not be targeted for deportation, that they will be able to apply for renewal. There are still the issues of the renewal fees. And again, that problem for DACA recipients that they do not have permanent status, it's just a temporary kind of relief and protection. For Homeland Security, I think those that study undocumented immigrants and feeling safe or feeling protected from deportation would probably highlight on Ricardo's point that we find studies showing a higher level of trust in law enforcement in those immigrant communities that have some people without authorized status, that they are more likely to go to the police. They are more likely to raise the alert or warning on possible threats and dangers when they feel like they are safe from themselves being deported when they come forward as witnesses. So from a criminal justice and Homeland Security perspective, I think there is something there where it could improve safety to have these communities feel like they can come forward and be open with law enforcement.
Elise, so much to talk about. We've scratched the surface. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great to speak with you.
Elise Cohen is an associate professor of political science at UW Green Bay.